Now the Lord has said unto Abraham, Get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee. And in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. The reason that most do not know verse 2 and 3 is because they don't follow verse 1. They try to stay with their land and their kindred and their fathers. Whenever the word father's house is used in the scriptures, it's a metaphor or a signal that he's talking about idolatry. So, get out of thy country. Get away from thy kindred and away from your father's idols unto a land that you don't know anything about. There can be no faith without that action. And it has to be relearned in every vessel. It cannot be accepted that you would adopt some other person's faith. God has no grandchildren. Get thee out of thy land. There, we'll see as we study Abraham, there are seven consecrations of Abraham. Consecration meaning that there were distinct points in his spiritual walk that had to be overcome, that had to be faced. And if he didn't face each one of them, the first one didn't do any good. In other words, there is no second place. There is no place or show in this game. There is only one winner. There is only the fruit of total obedience. There's no promise for a little bit of faith. There's no reward. There's no payoff for a little bit of faith or a little bit of testing or a... You understand? It's only the end. It's only everything or nothing. There's only total faith or total enemy of faith. There's only totally going without knowing or there's falling backwards. There's never a place of in-betweenness. It never has anything to do with anyone else. It's always tested in you as a unique individual, as if you were the only one on the face of the earth who believed. That's the only way the body, a body of believers, is existent. If there is ever any effort to protect a body, then the body will disappear or become apostate. It always and ever has to be every individual going through the Abrahamic experience. The fruit of that is a body of believers. Otherwise, it becomes an organization. A body is an organism, not an organization. It's a living body. But more important, and this is probably the most important thing you'll ever hear, it's a living body that has no interest in reward and no fear of punishment. If you are doing something for reward, you will trivialize it. If you're doing something out of fear of punishment, you by definition can never reach it. That's why the whole education system of America is wrong, because it is a concept of reward. Therefore, it trivializes what it's attempting to make important. Now, that's why you will never be rewarded here, especially the Levites. There's never a reward. If you think in terms of reward, i.e. a payoff for your efforts, this is, you, I promise you, you will be apostate the minute you do. Now, this is the lesson of Abraham. This is why Paul calls Abraham the father of faith, the model Christian, the perfect example of belief. That's why your parents have made religion unimportant to you, have made God unimportant to you, because they trivialized the concept of heaven as a reward and hell as a punishment. And so you fundamentally have become a living example of greed. Whatever takes place in the human condition, and this is universal, it's not any, this is a universal state. Whatever takes place in when you are rewarded for your effort, in other words, you're paid for your efforts, what will happen is in your mind, you will become bored with discontent with that which you're doing for the reward. In other words, you will by definition have to trivialize it. It doesn't matter if you're in the most exciting job in the universe. It doesn't matter if you're an astronaut. It doesn't matter if you're an intelligence agent. It doesn't matter what it is. When you're doing it for reward, you by definition of the human condition have to trivialize the act. And so therefore, it doesn't matter what it is that you do, ever. You will always become bored with it. That's what is so difficult with regard to not just the Bible study, but what we're doing in school. The school, there is no grades. There are no grades. There are no rewards for the students. Now that's mind-blowing.
Yeah, I was a total grade whore.
Oh, yeah. I can see that clearly now, because I remember A plus or an A was everything. And you get an A without really learning the material or being neat to do something.
And plus the fact that once you did it, then it became nothing. It's a trivial thing. How much do you remember of your education? Nothing.
Plus the payment.
Now, we must be about a totally different concept. Our lives and our kids and our actions must be about something totally different. We've got to, and that's been my quest for all these years, we have to create a totally different culture with totally different value systems than the world has, with totally different everything, music, songs, food, everything, dress even. So that you feel uncomfortable when you wear the dress of the Babylonians or the dress of the Egyptians. Now, I want you to know that externally, i.e. with physically what clothes you wear, but I also want you to know that internally, spiritually, so that when you have on the Egyptian garment or you have on spiritually the Babylonian garment, you will rush to get it off. Now, the Babylonian garment by definition is cause and effect, or effort reward. So the covering, which is the Babylonian garment, which is the garment of the whore, is effort for reward. So you, anybody in the world that's working for a reward, or working for peace of mind, or working for self-satisfaction, are working for any other reason other than meeting another person's need is a whore, by definition. The scriptures say the only reason you work is so that you have the wherewithal to meet the need of someone else. Now, you still are a million miles from that one. But the sad part of it is you're satisfied with being a million miles from that one. You still can't conceive of the issue that your own desire and efforts for career / work are the evidence of your whoredom. And rather than confess it as sin and repent of it, you try to find a better client for your whoredoms. Understand me? Do you really understand me?
I never feel like there's really a choice.
You better walk carefully in that one, Lee. Neither do the whores on Harry Hines. Go talk to him. You're not. Because you refused to understand that it's the self itself that must be confessed as sin, and so you constantly try to improve the surroundings, thinking the self is going to feel better. Sin isn't what you do, it's what you are. The evidence of your sin is your whoredom. Now, Paul, saying that Abraham was the perfect example of belief, pointed us all, our eyes right now have to go to Genesis 12. Get thee out. Everything else is nothing. The idea that you could conceive of a life where there was effort expended without an expectation of reward, either financial, mental, or spiritual, is the area that you must by now begin to enter into. This is where we are in this 3-year cycle. Can you begin to think that there is a possibility of entering into a way of thought, a way of looking at the world, a way of being, in which there is absolutely not even the slightest inference or desire to gain a reward from your efforts? On that one, we'll take a break. If you can hear, you have to tonight be ready to say that nothing in your life up to this point has had any worth. And nothing in my life at this point has any worth. And there's nothing in my life, there's nothing in my opinion, there's nothing in my value system, there's nothing in my ideas in this storehouse that has any merit, nor is there anything in here worth saving.
Too close
now. No, not erase, because that's not the test. Then you'd be just a robot. You've each been brought through a bunch of stuff up till now, but it's been nothing. You have to see, you have to be tested to see whether or not The only reason that stuff existed, it was like the sharp points, so that there would be nicks and crevices in you as a hunk of protoplasm, so that you'd be able to be knit together in love in a body. That's the only reason for those experiences. Eventually, to be transfigured, but not as an individual. We will never be transfigured as individuals. We will be transfigured as a body. It was right. It was optical quality. That's why the pyramid stands as a sign and a wonder and a witness, according to Isaiah 19, of the power of God. But what is it that you believe? That's what you must come out of. You understand? What are the things that you place importance on in your life? That's the things that you must come out of. Those are the things, the idols, the graven images that will keep you from knowing the fullness of God. And I promise you something, that I will be 100 times more brutal than I've been thus far on attacking those points in you. You must attack, you must be willing to have yours attacked and to attack others, so that you exhort one another daily while it is still called today. This is no longer the place for loving acceptance. This is the place for destruction. If we were writing today the scriptures, God didn't come down and physically tell Abraham to leave. He didn't come down and said, Abraham, you get out of here. You go over that way. He told Abraham to leave because he made it unbearable where he was. Abraham was born approximately 1996 before Christ, B.C., about 2000. He was 10 years old when he was taken or sent to Crete to be taught for the next 38 years by Shem and Noah. He was 48 when he went back and he preached to the tower. The destruction of the tower was preceded by Abraham's preaching to it. What?
I just think that's cool.
He was 59 or 58, 58, 59 when he took, probably 59, when he took that axe handle and physically broke all of the idols in the temple. And he was 60 when he left Ur, when he left Nimrod. He was there for 15 years without hearing anything from God. Then he was 75 when he left Haran. He was approximately 80 when he rescued Lot and met Melchizedek. He was 86 when Ishmael was born. He was 99 when Sodom was destroyed. He was 100 when Isaac was born. Between these times of great revelation, we're talking times of years. Years and years and years. We read this stuff and we think, but all things continue as they were from the beginning. And the points of revelation were years apart.
He,
what?
Well, just, you know, he wasn't just like out to lunch between the points of revelation.
No, what he was doing is he was faithful to them. But he also screwed up a lot. Like,
she's my sister.
She's my sister. Or, first time he got hungry, he God sent a famine to test him, and he escapes to Egypt at the point of leaving here. He was only sure that God was. And he was only sure that everything that he could see wasn't God.
And he was whole. When I think what came in my head was thinking about, you got to believe God is and he's a rewarder. So he was hoping God was a rewarder.
Yeah, he was a rewarder, not as we think of reward. Like, you know, he was a rewarder in that at the end of his life he would see God.
Wow.
That's the only reward.
Well, I mean,
He knew a lot of the stories.
Well, what we know, one thing that he knew the intimate meaning of the signs of the zodiac. So that he knew that the signs of the zodiac were a revelation of Messiah. He knew that the Great Pyramid of Giza, or whatever it is called, Giza, was a revelation of the Messiah. He knew, let's look and see what he knew. The scriptures say in Galatians 3 that the gospel was preached unto Abraham. The question is when? Isaiah says, or Jesus says of Abraham, that Abraham saw his day and was glad. When did he see it? So, that's what kept him going, right? I believe he saw it. He started seeing it when he was 10. With Abraham, it was a progressive revelation. So anyway. The Lord had said unto Abraham, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curses thee. And in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Now notice a plural to a singular. I will bless them, plural, that bless thee, and I will curse him, singular, that curseth thee. There is only one that can curse the seed of Abraham, and that is the Antichrist, or the son of Satan. Many can bless him. Bless meaning, the word bless in the Hebrew, and the word bless in Hebrew, it means is barak, and in Greek it's makarios, and it means not pour good thing or give you good stuff. It means not subject to fate. It means that for you, if you're being blessed, nothing that can happen to you is an accident. That everything in your life, past, present, and future, is God's arrangement. That's what blessing means. Now,
it's sort of implied from the plural to the singular that everything except the Antichrist
blesses you.
Blesses you.
There is no condition that you can be in that isn't a blessing.
So we're the son of the Antichrist, then, right?
The human mind, this mind, is the Antichrist.
The
son of Satan. Christ calls us we are the children of the devil. Your mind is. You understand? Now, you must have suspected by now that there's nothing that you can learn. The carnal mind is enmity against God. It's not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can it be. All you can learn about it will make you more weird. Just make sin exceedingly sinful. Until you finally abandon yourself. Until you finally see, and it's a revelation. It's, you know, you can repeat all night that sin isn't what you do, sin is what you are. when you study the sin offering, huh?
Saying it all night long is not the same.
No, because 5 minutes from now, if somebody challenges you on something, you'll try to be right. Sin can't be right. So why worry about it?
I never looked at it like that, but sin can be right.
Can't be right.
That's all it is.
All you can do, the best you can hope for, is that Christ is revealed and resurrected in you as a vessel. And that has to come by faith. So the best you can hope for is the cross, which kills this and lets him arise. Therefore, the best you can hope for is the abandonment of self. Now, the test of the abandonment of self is whether anything in the universe can put you on a trip. If there's anyone in the world that you haven't forgiven, if there's anyone who you resent, it's the evidence, God's evidence, that you have not abandoned yourself. You have not picked up the cross. That's why God said, if you can't forgive someone, God can't forgive you. Forgive means to forget. To be as though it never happened. If you're still motivated, moved, and made aware of something by some that other someone, then you haven't forgiven them. You have to be able to forgive everyone. Now, there is no possibility in the plan of God, in the economy of God, that anything that's going on within you has anything to do with anyone else. Whether it's love or hate, it can't have anything to do with anyone else. You will love someone who you think will benefit you, and you will hate someone who you think will do you physical, spiritual, or mental harm. Both of them are the same thing. Both of them have you as the subject of your sentence. So both of them are, from God's standpoint, evil. Sin. Doesn't matter whether you love them or hate them.
Love your enemies.
See, it's a miracle of grace. It's only in a community that you can do the things that were stated on the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount. There's no society in the world except in a community, a nonviolent community, in which the test of whether or not you're living the Sermon on the Mount can be revealed. Otherwise, you'll go hide in your little room. And you'll hate somebody. God says if you hate one person, you might as well be in hell. And do not let the sun go down on that. Are you hearing me? Mm-hmm. If there's one person you haven't forgiven, you might as well sign your life over to Satan. If the end of time came in the next instant, if right now there is someone that you have ought against, you won't be there. You won't be in the transfiguration. You hear that? Now the promise of this weird structure, this weird position where you have no walls to protect you, where you are able to forgive everyone, that if you can't forgive someone, you know that it means there's an area in your life that you haven't picked up the cross. It has nothing to do with the other person. It has everything to do with your own intransigence, your own sin. The reward of the abandonment of self is, I will bless them that bless you, and I will curse them. Curse meaning, where it's the word, let me tell you what it is, just so I'll make sure I get it exactly right. I will bless them that bless you and curse. It's erar. It means to bitterly curse, to execrate totally. I will curse them that curse you. The ones that curse you means to esteem lightly. In other words, or treat as trifling. God will totally destroy anyone and anything on the face of the earth that treats you lightly. Now, you may think this is weird, but I've seen this more times than I could care to talk about since we've been a body, since we've been believers. I'll bless them that bless you, and I will bitterly execrate them that consider you lightly. That's the position of this point of abandonment, where there is no protection for your own self of any kind, no protection for you or yours, where every time that you have insisted on your rights with another person, where every time you have the slightest thing that you haven't forgiven some other person for, that you're faced with that, you may be the one that God's going to bitterly execrate. Now, knowing the terror of God, I persuade men. Now, fortunately for me, I haven't been on the other side of the terror, but I've seen the terror vis-a-vis what happens to other people. Now, the fruit of totally abandoning yourself is this act of the first consecration of Abraham.
But even in this, there's not really a lot. In these words, there's not a lot for Abraham.
There's nothing.
I'll bless them, I'll curse them.
No.
In you, they will be blessed.
Right. No, there's nothing for Abraham. Because in the spirit, the act, the ultimate act of selfishness in truth is dying for someone else. I mean, the idea that from God's standpoint, when you can say, you know,
I'm ready to go now.
Huh?
I'm ready to go now.
Yeah, but when you can say, what everything I have is for your sake, what happens to me is unimportant as long as I meet your need.
Or kill me, don't kill them.
Kill me, don't kill them. All of those positions. That's the ultimate reward, because that's the ecstasy, the joy unspeakable that every man is searching for by his own trying to gather it.
Yeah. That's what we've seen a lot on Sunday nights lately. That condition.
But I want you all to search your hearts tonight and be ready to talk about it on Thursday. I don't know why we're emphasizing this, but I feel that you've got to come to the point of being free if there's anyone that you have any ought against. The slightest bit, it has to be confessed and seen as sin. Or really, we as a body can't go any further than this until that takes place. Do you understand? Okay, that's enough for tonight.